If you have a schedule to keep and appointments to make, then you will not want to miss this show on Google Calendars as we continue our Summer Software Showcase series. All that and more coming up next. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. Welcome back. Episode 241 for June 20th, 2012. This is Martin Spriggs, and joining me, as usual, the lovely, the talented, the Northern Belle, Sally Draper.
Good morning, Martin. I have to say lovely and talented about you someday. You're lovely and talented as well.
Well, you'd have to do the intro then.
Yeah, I don't think so.
And neither one of those really apply. It's a stretch as far as I'm concerned, to me at least. So
I think Google is lovely and talented this week.
Is it? Why is that?
They're my friends because my oldest is off on a class trip and we've been Google chatting every night.
Oh, really?
So, and it's cool because I've got a couple of other young men who like to talk to their big brother, and so everybody's chatting with him. And
so typing, you mean chatting, meaning typing, or video?
Yep.
Video chatting?
No, we haven't been doing the video thing, but yeah, just to have a little bit of connection, a few minutes to catch up on what he's seen on his trip and things like that, so... Feeling the
I remember the day, and it was only yesterday, where we only had letters.
Yeah.
Had to find a stamp, had to find a post office, had to make sure you had an envelope and the address, and 3 days later, you know, voila. Which was kind of neat. When I was in college, that was the highlight of the day when the mail was in, especially when you're dating and you're trading correspondence with your sweetheart, that something to look forward to. Now it's instantaneous, so... Everybody's texting and whatever. I sound like an old curmudgeon, don't I?
Actually, my son had a taste of that last week because he was at camp. And at camp, there's no technology. So you can only get snail mail if you go to Camp Phillips. So he said he waited every day for mail. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he didn't get any. So, yeah. Failed in that regard. So
my wife and I had a conversation the other day. This is kind of related. We were talking about... teaching cursive to kids, and the growing trend, of course, is that that's a waste of time. If you're going to spend time teaching a child to write, have them at the keyboard, because perhaps in a few years cursive will go away. In fact, you will need to be an expert to read some of the ancient, quote-unquote, ancient documents that were done in cursive, like the Constitution and those kinds of things, which is really interesting. And it was interesting to hear her take on that, because she kind of agreed with that if there's time to be spent in the classroom, boy, it sure seems like being able to type on a keyboard is a life skill that you're going to absolutely have, more so than writing in cursive.
And she's an English teacher, right?
She is, yeah. That's what doubly amazed me. But but that's how assignments are submitted. And if you're a slow typist, you're behind the curve. And it's going to take you probably longer than it should to do homework and submit assignments, write papers, those kinds of things. Back when I was in school, I had my mom type my papers. She was a great typist. And now I've ultimately learned that. And I can type a lot faster than I can write.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, the whole slow typist thing, they don't even teach kids typing anymore,
at least it's an assumption
at the high school level. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They're texting, they can do it, they'll figure it out.
Yep, they will.
So different world.
A necessity of life. Another necessity of life, how about that transition,
Impressive. Is
keeping a calendar. And that is kind of at the heart and soul of every church and school office, is that calendar. And we're continuing a little bit of a series we're doing this summer called the Summer Software Showcase, where we pick one particular software software that has ministry application and do a little bit of a deep dive, not necessarily a step-by-step, but what is it? Why is it useful? What are the ministry uses? And last week we had a good, what did we even talk about last week? It's in the distant past at this point.
We talked about Jing screencasting.
That's right. How could I forget? But this,
lots of ministry applications
week,
for that.
There were. This week we're talking about a Google product called Google Calendar, which has been around a long time and maybe overlooked by a lot of people. But I think I'm hearing a lot of churches and schools going to it, even those that are using Final Web, because it offers some great flexibility in what it can do.
Yep, and the price tag is free, which
absolutely.
Is absolutely a great reason to do it. You know, I came from working for the Senate and having the ability to use Microsoft Office and Exchange. Mm-hmm. So we could share calendars. You know, you and I do a lot of scheduling together, so I can see when your free and busy times are and that kind of thing. And we didn't have that component in our church and school. And Google Calendar opened that up for us.
Yep.
Because of the ability to have your personal calendars, your group calendars, sharing, embedding them on websites, all different flavors of calendars right here in this one free tool.
Right. So maybe we should explain a little bit about what it is and then go into the ministry uses. I think the best way to describe it is it's a web-based calendar, but it's a little bit more than that because you can have multiple. So you can have a calendar for everything. So it's not like the traditional paper calendar or desk calendar that you had where you wrote everything and had to decipher work from home and, you know, kids' schedules and whatever. In Google Calendar, you can have as many calendars as you want. They're all color-coded, and you can turn them on and off to your heart's content. So if you only want to see your work calendar, you can just show that. If you want to see your spouse's calendar, your kids' calendar, the church calendar, they can all be mixed together, or you can view them just one at a time, and you can view them on multiple platforms. So you can obviously view them on the web, on a web browser, but many of us have now mobile devices or tablets, and you can view them in all its glory and many different configurations there too. So it's truly portable, and that calendar is obviously a very essential part of our lives.
Yep, I'm just looking at my Google Calendar right now, Martin, and I have about six personal calendars that I maintain. So there's a lot of colors on my mm-hmm. Google Calendar. But in addition, you can, I don't know if you would call it subscribe, you can get other people's calendars that are shared. And for instance, I have the MVL, the Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School calendar, mm-hmm. is a calendar I can turn on and off on my display. And so I can see all the different high school events that are going on. And that's just because they use the Google Calendar tool. And anytime they do and make it public, then I have the option of subscribing or grabbing that calendar as well. I also have the New Orleans Saints calendar, just so I can keep up with what's going on with the Saints. That's right. So there's ways to incorporate a to-do list. There's we have a special calendar we'll share a little later in the show where you can get all the lectionary notes. Just a lot of different flavors to it. For me personally, I have a separate calendar for all my kids' events. So when they have music lessons or doctor appointments or whatever, I have that on a separate calendar. For school, you know, certainly we have a school calendar, but I did a separate calendar for our school memory work, mm-hmm. for instance, you know. So lots of different ways you can segment your calendars.
Yep.
And it's all color-coded, so it's pretty to look at.
Now, our church is just going to Google Calendar for its calendar, but you've been using it for some time. How about the that nasty thing called printing that we all have to do yet for the newsletter? How does that work for you? That was, I think, a shortcoming in a lot of electronic calendars, is now you got to have a printed copy, and how do you keep those in sync?
Right. Yeah, it's actually a shortcoming with Google Calendar as well. It doesn't print pretty. It'll cut off longer text and that kind of thing. And so actually my husband kind of programmed our own solution to that. So it takes the data from the Google Calendar, feeds it into a Word-based RTF file. So you can open it in Word or OpenOffice, whatever word processor you make use of. And then you can edit and, you know, customize the calendar to your heart's content, as opposed to just getting the one printout from the Google Calendar. So that's been a real great solution for us, and it allows you to do multiple calendars, just like we're talking about. So you could mix together your church and school calendar or whatever it is.
And I'm assuming he's still willing to make that available to all takers?
Sure, it's out there on the web for free download, printmycal.wordpress.com. Cool. And he's actually working on a pretty major upgrade to it right now. I think it will be a real big leap forward once he gets this upgrade completed. So
good. The programming pastor.
Yeah. Cool. A little bit of a hobby.
Yeah, I like it. We should probably talk about a couple of the other features that are very useful, not just as a church or school calendar, but as a personal personal time stewardship tool, and that's appointment scheduling and reminders. So those of you that have used tools like Outlook before know that one of the great features there is a reminder system, and that scheduling system where you can see free busy schedules from other people. Google Calendar does the same thing, and especially if you have Google Apps, this works really well because you just need to log in. Everybody's got access to everybody else's calendar to whatever degree you want to give them access. And then you can see when to schedule those meetings, when resources are available. So if a meeting room is available, you can also do resources like projectors, smart boards, those kinds of things, when those might be available, and do scheduling all through the one tool that is Google Calendar. So lots of flexibility there. I think they've made some nice improvements, and pretty solid. I like what it does.
Absolutely. And you mentioned reminders as well. I think that's been a lifesaver for me. As you add events to Google Calendars, you can opt to have a pop-up reminder, which works if your calendar is open in your browser. It'll pop up a new little window and remind you of something. It will actually email you reminders.
Yep.
Or you can even set up SMS or text messaging reminders.
Awesome.
So, you know, we live in the time of task lists and appointments and very busy schedules. And so my ultimate thing, if I need to remember something, absolutely, I'll set up the text message version. You know, so if I'm getting a text about it, I better not forget whatever that event is.
And you can configure that to text you, you know, 15 minutes ahead of time or 5 minutes ahead of time, or, you know, you do have some configurability there, right?
Absolutely. Another thing I do with my Google Calendar is I have it email me once a day, my daily agenda. And so when I wake up in the morning, I get an email from Google Calendar waiting on me with all the events I have scheduled for that day. So that's pretty convenient, just a one-stop glance at my calendar, reminder of how I need to structure my day.
Okay. So maybe we should jump to ministry uses. The MO of our particular series is to come up with five, not that there are only five in some cases, but at least five ministry uses. So what's number one that we came up with, Sally?
We've definitely hinted at all of these, but the first one on the list absolutely is just being able to communicate using the calendar to manage activities for our church and school. All our church and school events are on the calendar. People know because that calendar is embedded on our website that they can go to our website and see the up-to-the-minute calendar events. So if I change something about a church event on my iPad tablet, it immediately syncs across to our website. It's constantly dynamically updated.
Yep,
just a great way to communicate. And certainly with the Print My Cal feature, you can also print it for your newsletter. So you have that up-to-minute calendar printed for your newsletter.
Yeah, that embedding function is very powerful because you can embed different views. So you could do the whole grid or a month view. You could do the agenda view, which is probably the one that is most useful because that just shows you what the next 4 days in a list format, which fits nicely on a lot of websites. But the user, when they come to it, does have the option of clicking on it or clicking on different views and opening it up. So that's really a nice feature to enable for your congregation members. And as you mentioned, they could subscribe So if like at MBL, which is a great function that they provide, you can keep up to date and it could be viewed right within the calendar, your own calendar, when and where you want it to appear. So
absolutely. We actually copy that agenda view or list view of events into our church bulletin every week.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
So, you know, just a drag and drop copy. We can edit, you know, from what we've copied from the screen, but it allows us to get that calendar information into the bulletin as well.
Sweet. Like it. Number two is meeting scheduling. We talked about that. You can get that free busy schedule. You can see when multiple people are available so that you don't have to spend that time, you know, going back and forth with email or phone calling saying, are you available now, now, now? As long as people keep up their schedules and everybody's using Google Calendar, a real helpful tool. But there are some other uses for this, and not just meeting scheduling, but kind of like the old-fashioned sign-up sheets. Or you can book me. So, for instance, if a teacher is trying to schedule home visits or parent-teacher visits, they could use Google Calendar with some tools like youcanbook.me. We've talked about this in the past, where they could ask the parents to sign up for a time slot that the teacher has pre-configured using this tool and Google Calendar. And then all of the appointments are set up right within Google Calendar, so you know who's coming in at what time, and you have total control over that.
Right. The advantage there is that the people scheduling with you don't have to have a Google Calendar in order to do that scheduling. Another tool in that category is called Doodle. So we'll make sure and include links to all those appointment scheduling resources in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And along with that, this is one thing I ran across when I was helping our congregation, our school, set up Google Apps, is that there are some nice Outlook integration tools so that if you have Google Apps and you install the little plugins that keep Outlook and your Google Calendar and email, Gmail, in sync, you can use Outlook like you have an Exchange server built in, but Google is basically providing that look of everybody at everybody else's calendar and the free busy scheduling, those kinds of things. So
sounds like a lot to wrap your brain around, but it's so nice when you get it set up and it just works for you. So worth the effort to get those plugins and things working for you. Ministry resource number three, Martin, is resource scheduling. Along the same lines as meeting scheduling, but you mentioned that you may have equipment that needs to be scheduled or rooms that you want to take reservations on, who can use this conference room or the library media center during these hours or whatever it may be. And you could use a Google Calendar to coordinate all of that.
Yep. Number four, specialty calendaring. We briefly touched on this. You mentioned you had the New Orleans Saints calendar. There's one that's probably a little more useful, at least from my perspective, and that's the lectionary. We've talked about this in the past, where the entire church year, including hymn of the day and the readings and I think even vestment colors and those kinds of things are all included on this Google Calendar that you can simply subscribe to and turn it on and off as you need.
Yeah, I think this is courtesy of our worship area that they provide this digitized version of the lectionary, and we put it in the Google Calendar format. Many people are subscribed to that, have it brought into their Google Calendar automatically. I have it right here on mine, and like you said, can see what the readings are and things like that. So, pastor friend.
Yeah, another use in the church would just be for common lists, like usher schedules, communion assistant schedules, a flower schedule, altar guild, whatever. All of those can be put on its own Google Calendar, and then those people who care about it can turn it on, subscribe, and turn it on, and now they have it right in their calendar.
And then I'm also thinking about all the different groups or associations maybe that elementary schools, congregations, high schools may belong to. So if you have a shared sports schedule among the different elementary schools in your area, a Google Calendar would be a great way to organize that whole sports schedule across different schools.
Sure. And then last but not least, mobile access. And a lot of people, I think, are a little reticent to kind of go digital with their calendar because their paper calendar, they can can take with them. They've got their day timer or their appointment book or whatever, and they've got that along with. Mobile access to this kind of alleviates the need to have that, so that if you've got a Google Calendar and you have a smart device of any kind, it can be, you know, an iPod Touch, it can be an iPad, it can be an iPhone, it can be an Android, whatever. Even some of the dumber smartphones, so to speak, have some syncing capabilities in their calendar tool with Google Calendar. So mobile access is enables you to take that calendar with you, and it works pretty seamlessly. We've got some instructions on how to set that up, but it's it works really well.
Yeah, I can't tell you the number of times I've been in a ladies' aid meeting or something along those lines where I've needed to check the church calendar, mm-hmm. and it's in my pocket. Right. And that's very valuable. I know my husband appreciates having it as he goes out on his various visits and calls and things. So yep. Really nice.
I'll go out of order here a little bit, Sally, but we should probably give just a little bit of a tease for next week's show, because we continue our summer software showcase. And next week we're going to be talking about kind of an educational focus, Schoology. Schoology is an online learning management system, I guess would be the appropriate term. But it includes, and we'll talk a lot more about it next week, so tune in then, but it includes things like, you know, the ability to grade, post assignments, communicate with teacher, post materials, take tests, those kinds of things. So that
and
will be
all
our...
of that with a Facebook feel. So it's very
it's
interactive,
nicely done.
And social feeling.
Exactly. So tune in next week for more of our summer software showcase series.
And if you have ideas that you'd like us to cover in this series, a favorite piece of software or software that you'd like to learn more about, please let us know.
Absolutely. And we may even have you on the show to talk about it if you're a user, you're a subject matter expert. Let's move on to our picks of the week, Sally.
Well, my pick of the week is going to be one that came in handy with summer reading and vacation time. It's called BooksShouldBeFree.com, and it's free audiobooks from the public domain organized in a really great interface. So you can download free audiobooks. They have them in MP3 format. You can also click a link and easily get them from iTunes in a podcast format. So you just download the entire book chapter by chapter as a podcast. So there's lots of flavors to this. Many or most all of the books are via the LibriVox website. Mm-hmm. Just a different interface than LibriVox. Includes book covers, so you get a little bit more of a feel for the book. And great ways to search. You can look at the top 100, different genres like fiction and fantasy, or many other different ways to search, teen and young adult, children's books, all different things like that. We made use of this when we vacationed a few weeks ago and listened to a Tom Swift book. This was a throwback from years ago, one of my husband's favorites as he was growing up. And we had fun listening to all the technology and these Tom Swift kind of electronic digital guy. And it's really interesting to listen to. I also found one called The Adventures of Sally by P.G. Woodhouse. And there's a whole bunch of Woodhouse books out there.
One of my favorite authors.
Very
Ask
fun.
Ask Jeeves series. Even though written, I don't know, probably early 1900s. Awesome writing.
Great vocabulary and just very lighthearted and fun. And I couldn't resist the title, The Adventures of Sally. Can't get any better than that. It's a great book. So, if you're looking for something to listen to this summer, what's cool about it is since they're in the public domain, there's also EPUB versions, Kindle versions of most all of the books. So in addition to being able to stream from the website, download for your iPod or whatever it may be, your listening device, you can also get the various text versions of the book as well. Mm-hmm. So really well done and a fun site to visit. Very intuitive to use.
Very nice. Good pick. Mm-hmm. Speaking of listening, I have a hardware pick that could come in handy if you are an audiobook listener, and that is the Plantronics Backbeat Go Bluetooth wireless earbuds. Long name for a little device. Basically, they're earplugs, Bluetooth enabled, and they you sync them or you pair them with your Bluetooth device, your phone or, you know, whatever, your iPad, whatever it is that has Bluetooth on it that will transmit audio. And these are little in-ear earbuds that you obviously put in both ears. And they're connected with a tangle-free cable that you can either hang in front of your chin or behind your neck to kind of stay out of the way. And it comes with three sets of adjustable silicone earbuds, so you can get just the right size. But you can listen to, you know, whatever audio is coming from your phone or device, so that could be music or video, whatever. But you can also take and receive calls because it has a microphone built in. So there's a little doohickey on the right that obviously acts as a power switch, but also will answer a call or adjust the volume, go, you know, up or down. There are little apps that you can install on the phone that will tell you what kind of battery life you get. There's a rechargeable battery in here, lithium ion, and it will charge up in about an hour or so, I found, and will last. It'll give you about four and a half hours of listening time, which is not bad because these are pretty small. These are one of the smaller ones. I've seen a lot of the Bluetooth ones that are totally wireless have that big thing that goes behind your ear. These really don't have that at all. It charges with just a little charger, mini, I think it's a micro USB charger that a lot of the phones are using today. You could use really any charger you want that had that connector. Cost $99, so it's not cheap. I think you can find a little bit cheaper on Amazon. I know you can find them in Best Buy, which is where I got mine. But I had been looking for these for, you know, like walking or running. These are great in the gym. So if you're on the treadmill or you're doing any lifting or sit-ups or whatever, these, you know, just keep the wire out of the way. You can put your phone in your pocket or whatever, clip it onto the belt, whatever it is that you're wearing, and they just that cord doesn't get in the way of, you know, whatever it is that you're doing. Good sound quality. I think a nice buy. I'm really happy with the purchase, and worth your consideration if you're looking for wireless Bluetooth earbuds.
Interesting. I had a wireless Bluetooth earbud pick back at the end of 2011, and I've been using and enjoying mine. Mine are the Motorola SDH10 Bluetooth headphones.
Yeah, I've seen those, yeah.
And
that's kind of the hard, that doesn't
hard
have the
plastic,
cord, but that has the,
right,
the hard plastic, yeah, behind the
behind
behind
your
head, right?
Mm-hmm.
You still
so
liking those?
I am. They charge up and last quite a while, and yeah, the quality is great. I need it in both ears. I'm kind of easily distracted, so I like the fact that you get both sides,
yeah,
not just the one ear.
Yeah,
typical Borg looking Bluetooth headphones,
right. So yeah, these have both ears. I do find that if I use it as a phone, so if I get a phone call, I better pull one of the ears out because you can't hear yourself talk, and that's really disturbing. So yeah, just leaving the one side in seems to work best if you're taking a phone call.
Okay, great pick. Thank you.
All right, let's move on. We've got a little reminder for some training we have coming up, Sally.
Right, we are doing Final Web for Dummies, Final Web for Teachers coming up July 9th through 19th. So two full weeks. You can pick and choose which dates work best with your calendar. We're doing this training via Google Hangouts, and we'd love to hang out with you. We'll have video going all day long on the days of classes, and you can ask questions to your heart's content. And those classes, again, are scheduled for July 9th and 16th for teacher training, or for dummies training, beginning, intermediate, and advanced, a three-day session, July 10th through 12th or 17th through 19th. Mm-hmm. Cost is $48.99 a day or $128.99 for the three-day dummies class. And we'll have links in the show notes if you want to sign up. This is the time to get signed up, folks, because registration closes this Sunday, the 24th, I believe, of
right.
June.
Sunday at midnight. Mm-hmm. So time is running out. And space is limited. We cannot take an infinite number, so you'll want to do that right away. Shall we move on to community feedback, Sally?
Sure. I'm saying that as my mind map is a little bit slow, but it is responding now. So I'd love to move on.
Just coax it along, sweet talk it.
That's right. We had a lot of interesting links shared via Digo, thanks to Jason Schmidt and a few from both of us as well. Jason shared a link to the iTunes Link Maker. I bet everyone's been in the boat that there's a cool iTunes podcast,
app, whatever it may be, ebook.
And you'd like to share a link to it, but it's kind of convoluted as to how you get a link that actually opens up the iTunes store and delivers the person to the page you want to point them to. But let that not worry you any longer, because there is the iTunes Link Maker where you can search for whatever it is you want to provide a link to. Once you find it, you just click and it gives you the HTML coding that you need to add with the appropriate link to your website. It'll even provide a small or a large button to go along with it if you want to include that on your webpage as well. So great way to generate a link to include on your website to anything in iTunes.
Yeah, this is especially useful if you publish sermons or whatever it is that you're recording at your particular church or school to iTunes. Just a quick way to get people right there so that they can subscribe and get your good content.
Right. Another great resource from Jason is the PBS Learning Media website. You know that PBS, the public broadcasting system, has a lot of great television shows that have a lot of learning going on in them. And these are great for students, particularly at the elementary age, I'd say. And they've taken all the content from their website and organized it here so you can access it by subject level and subject area and grade level. So if you're looking for a math lesson on decimals, for instance, you can find specific resources pulled from all of the available content on the PBS site that meets that criteria. So I think they say there's tens of thousands of classroom-ready digital resources. They even have lesson plans to go along with them.
Yeah, it's not just content, but it's not just the videos themselves, but it's photos, images, other kinds of images, diagrams, and then these lesson plans. So it seems like a nicely curated area that is fun. It seems like it would be very pleasurable to use and navigate.
Yeah, pleasurable for teachers for sure as they find great resources.
Right.
So thanks for sharing, Jason. And Jason taught us a lesson this morning as well, because he linked us to Mrs. Perkins' dulce words. And apparently this dulce is a standard in teaching reading. And it's from back in 1948, where Edward William Dulce published...
Yeah.
Okay. Published a list of 220 frequently used words and a separate list of 95 common nouns. And what they found is his reading list cover 50 to 75% of the words in children's literature. And so what Jason linked to are some downloadable PowerPoints that students can use to practice these sight words. So it has the word on the screen. It has the audio along with it so they can listen to the word. And that's just one of the many resources that are available from Mrs. Perkins. So if you want to check out her website for teaching reading, you might find some great resources for early elementary.
Yeah, this is apparently Mrs. Perkins is a first grade focused teacher. So a lot of the stuff there is in that grade level. But they have, like you mentioned, first through third grade. But they have activity sheets, worksheets, testing, games, other resources, And truly, I'd never heard of Dulce before. This is an education for me. Thank you, Jason. But this looks like a great collection of those kinds of resources. I'm going to have to go home and impress my wife that I learned something about education today.
Good thing. All right. And then finally, Jason shared a link to a set of instructions for extracting files or objects from a PowerPoint 2010 file. Mm-hmm. So let's say you received a PowerPoint file and it has a great video embedded in it, but it's an object inside that PowerPoint and you'd like to actually get a copy of that video file. This actually teaches you how to do that. It has you save the file as a zip file, which kind of breaks down the PowerPoint file into the individual components.
Yeah.
And then you can grab the embedded content
individual
that way.
Assets, so, yeah. Awesome. To
yeah. right through the process.
So I can't tell you how many times I've gotten people that send me stuff, you know, via PowerPoint, and it's just a pain. So this mm-hmm. is a great tip.
Yep. Good hacker kind of tip. Mm-hmm. So, Martin, you had a few links that you shared on Digo as well?
I did. I ran across a couple of articles. One is from communicatejesus.com, and it's a blog post. It's a two-part series, I believe, called Selecting a Church Member Database. And I know every church is, if they don't have a member database, they're thinking about one. And this kind of goes through the ins and outs of your options. And then there's even a list of the most common use church databases. Interestingly enough, Shepherd Staff, which is the one that we promote and use, is not on here, probably because it's an older program and is pretty limited to the Lutheran Church. So, but there's all kinds of good tips here and good thinking about, you know, maybe things you should consider. So selecting a church member database is one of the things I ran across. The other, just this morning, there was an article on Church Mag, which is a blog that I read, about why every church should consider an Apple TV. And Sally, you've got an iPad there, which can, I think, do AirPlay, which mm-hmm. is the process of sending what's on the screen or video that's on the screen to another device, specifically an Apple TV. So this could act very much like a presentation tool where you've got your Apple TV hooked up in your conference room or wherever. And as long as everything's on the same Wi-Fi network, you can share remotely that way. So they make some good use cases on the site for potentially having an Apple TV, which is a fairly inexpensive device as far as those devices go. I think they're about $99.
So you're basically cutting out the middleman. You don't need a projector in this process. So you're saving money not buying a projector and instead using your
TV.
iPad to,
right. yep,
to
right.
do the
exactly.
projection, basically. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds good to me. Okay. I'm all for more iPads and Apple devices. So
sure.
All right, I had a couple
Apple
to share
to
as well. I tagged a link to checkthis.com. It's a website I was made aware of this week that's for easily making one-page web pages and publishing them to the web. You don't even have to have an account. You can just come here and type up whatever your web page is that you want. You can add images. You can add polls. Lots of different things you can do with your web page. There's color options and background options. You can make it public. You can privatize it. All of that without having any kind of an account. It's basically kind of a burner web page site. So if you wanted to just create something for a short term or one time use or whatever it may be, this is a super easy way to do it. It's got big, huge fonts, which makes you think it's really easy. Really slick interface that's not overwhelming to people. So I was thinking this would be a great way to have kids create a project web page.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. if they're working on a book report or something, just type it up on this quick website, publish it, and send you a link to it. And looks like a fun site to use. You can log in using Facebook or your Google account and save your pages and be able to come back and edit. If you don't log in, once you publish it, there's no way to get back and make edits to it because there's no account tied to it or whatever. But pretty straightforward. Checkthis.com.
Okay, great.
I also tagged a page called Hojoki. And I haven't tried this. I would like to try it. I should have done it before the podcast. I just came across it this morning. But basically, it says it ties together all your different cloud applications into one feed. So it has things like your Dropbox, your Google Calendar, your Google Drive and Google Reader, Evernote, Basecamp, if you use Basecamp for project management, Twitter, and more. And basically, it can pull together all the different shared updates to those different areas if you're working with a group or whatever it may be. For a small business kind of setting where you aren't investing in a higher level enterprise solution, this might be a way to make use of all those cloud apps and pull them together in one place. So worth looking at. Hojoki.
Cool.
And then finally, a quick follow-up to some comments we talked about last week about Facebook changing their policy related to pages on the site. In specific, they started providing some, what do they call it, insights or analytical kind of mm-hmm. information about how many people are actually seeing your page. And it caused concern that fans of your page aren't really getting your page information into their feed. So if you have a church page and maybe 200 people have liked your church page, that doesn't mean that everything you're putting on your church page is showing up on their Facebook main page. There was a rant by an actor, George Takei, and he said, wow, and they even want me to pay to have things show up and that kind of thing, which is what we talked about last week. Interestingly enough, he had a fan who works for Facebook, or at least claims to, and says that he works on the product that he's describing, and he wanted to clarify a bit. He said, nothing about the way page posts are delivered to fans has changed. The point of confusion is that pages don't realize that their posts were never reaching 100% of their fans. If you go into your page insights, you'll see that that's always been the case. And it makes sense if you stop and think about it, he says. There's just no way to see all of the stuff happening on Facebook in your feed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it would be thousands of things, and your feed would just be ultra cluttered if you have a very
kinda
large
like Twitter.
Print. Yeah, exactly. So fast that you wouldn't keep up with any of it. So they have analytics in place to rank things based on the people and pages that you interact with the most. So if you're interacting with the church page or whatever it may be, then you're going to get that in your feed. But if you aren't, then it's going to fall out of your feed because you aren't visiting the page that much.
Liking a page or commenting on a post, something like that, or liking a post or commenting on a post.
Yeah, or just viewing
or
the
visiting
page.
It. Okay.
Exactly. So I guess the main thing to get across is there hasn't been any huge policy change by Facebook. I think the thing that raised the red flag is that they now are offering you the ability to pay to have your content higher level ranking or whatever. But as far as content falling down in the rankings, that's always been the case. So just a little bit of a follow-up on that concept.
Yeah, that is news to me, and I guess as you say it does make sense. But so congregation should be aware of that. Just because your members have liked your page, that doesn't mean they're seeing everything you're posting. Interesting.
That will do it for community feedback for this week, Martin.
Okay, we would love your feedback. Please share. Go to our website, wellstech.wells.net, or send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. We're on all the social networks, so you can find us easily there. Or send us a voicemail, 405-4-WELLS. That's 405-367-9357. Have not had a voicemail in a while, so jump in there and share your thoughts. Can you talk to us about anything you'd like? All right. Let's close the show, Sally, with the music of Koine and their song Built on the Rock. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will talk to you next week.
Built on the rock, the church shall stand, even when steeples are falling. Crumbled half spires in every land, bells still are chiming and calling. Calling the young and old to rest, but above all the soul distressed, longing for rest everlasting. Excelling. Yet he who dwells in heaven above chooses. God's house of living stones, built for his own habitation. He through baptismal grace atones, heirs of his wondrous salvation. Were we but to his name to tell, yet he would deign with us to dwell, with all his grace and his favor. Here stands the font before our eyes, telling how God did receive us. The altar recalls Christ's sacrifice and what the sacrament gives us. Here sound the scriptures that proclaim Christ yesterday,
his message is free.